Welcome back to Building Buffalo. I'm Newell Nussbaumer, and today I'm here with developer Rocco Termini and Peter Burakowski, who is the new executive director of Buffalo Place. Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Peter, can you tell me a little bit about your background? I know this is a loaded question, but just in a little bit of a nutshell.
So I grew up here in Western New York and...
In Hamburg, right here?
I currently live in Hamburg, yeah.
Okay.
Some of my earliest jobs were related to arts and culture. So I was at Righteous Babe Records right out of college and eventually worked at the History Museum. That's when around the time you and I first met, when I was head of communications there. And then I worked at Visit Buffalo Niagara, taking travel writers around town and helping write the visitor guide for Buffalo. Then I got into the world of startups. So for the first 6 years of 43 North, I was the team that got that off the ground and led marketing and strategy there. Then I co-founded a tech company called Helix Intel, and then I went to UB to eventually lead their startup ventures team. And now I'm just under a month into my new job here leading Buffalo Place.
That's impressive. You're a musician. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that actually fits really well into what you're doing with Buffalo Place.
Yeah, I've been a songwriter, you know, and playing gigs since I was in high school. And a lot of the songs that I've written over the years have woven in Buffalo's history. So, you know, I've got a song cycle about the Pan American Exposition and the assassination of McKinley, a bunch of songs that weave in the history of our waterfront and the old First Ward, and how these things all kind of weave into my own personal family history. And I still get to gig out a little bit these days. My brother-in-law, Mark, and I played, you know, 3 or 4 shows a year, and it's nice to still keep a foot in that.
What's the band called?
These days, we go by Lake and Rail, which is the name of one of the grain elevators along the waterfront.
Yes, it is. Rocco, can you talk a little bit about the new Ignite the Streets initiative by the Electric District Alliance?
Sure. What our intention is to put feet on the street. And that's one thing that's missing downtown right now. And businesses downtown are event driven. And in the Electric District, which runs on Ellicott and Washington between Huron and Mohawk, there's 7 businesses, which is very unusual for downtown to have 7 restaurants, bars in one spot. And what we're trying to do is keep those 7 alive and in business. And you do that by activating the streets. And so we're going to have pickleball on the street. We're going to have bocce on the street. We're going to have bands every Friday night. We're going to have watch parties. We just bought a 10 by 20 LED TV to have watch parties for soccer and football. We're going to have jazz on Sundays. We're going to have the Buffalo Jazz Festival downtown. And one of the things that we're really excited about is that Mohawk Street is going to be closed for 2 months. And we're going to have an Oktoberfest there and a winter market, a Christmas market. And it's the same Christmas market that was at the Richardson, which drew 250,000 people last year.
Did it really?
Yes, it did.
I was not aware of that.
And it was written up.
In 2 months? You're closing the street for 2 months.
We're closing the street for 2 months. It's the first time this has ever been done, and only made possible because we have a new mayor and that he's taken a different direction on what we need to do downtown. And if it takes closing a street for 2 months to bring people downtown, he says yes.
Peter, I would imagine that you have met with Sean Ryan.
Yes.
How did that meeting go?
Great. I'm really enthusiastic about Mayor Ryan and also his team. They all seem very passionate and committed to the future of downtown. And already I've had a chance to work pretty closely with them in just these first few weeks of being on the job. And I think directionally and spiritually, we're on the same page here. So I'm really enthusiastic about that.
Yeah, because you're coming into this position at Buffalo Place where downtown needs a lot of work.
Yeah, when you think about it, like downtown, I think we all felt a lot of momentum going into COVID. You saw a lot of storefronts that were, you know, starting to pick up a little bit, new restaurants coming in. And downtowns across the country, you know, took a hit, you know, with COVID, and people's, you know, patterns in their life, whether it be their work life or their personal life, changed a lot. And I think Buffalo was not immune from that. You know, now we got to think about, like, how do we build on a lot of the great pieces we have downtown to ensure that this is truly a place that, you know, 5-10 years from now is a top 20 downtown in terms of the amount of residential you see down there, the amount of foot traffic, you know, during weekdays and on the weekends, the presence of, you know, active storefronts, whether that be on the first floor for, you know, retail or restaurants, or service businesses, that when you come down there on the average day, that you have a fantastic experience. And so, I really want us to be, as a community, you know, pushing hard, not just to take one step forward for downtown, but to make this an example across the country of a vibrant, exciting 24/7 district.
Which is interesting. And one of my next questions was going to be, have you or do you plan on traveling to Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Rochester to see what some of the initiatives that these other cities are doing?
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think both members of our team and board have already been talking about this. In fact, I was just talking with some folks in the last day on that front. You know, both places we've already, across our board and team, have spent a lot of time in our travels. And I've, you know, when I was at 43 North, I used to visit a lot of vibrant cities, especially ones that had really active startup ecosystems. And there's a lot I think about that we can learn from other communities. I don't think we have to recreate the wheel in terms of ideas. I think we want to steal all the best ideas that we can for our community that fit our community. And I think there will be opportunities, you know, that I want to build into that members of my staff, members of our community, where we do field trips that are really intentional and get to meet the folks that are in roles similar to mine in their communities. Say, like, how did you do what you did? What were the steps you had to take for it? You know, what are the roadblocks you saw and how'd you overcome those? You know, because, like, of course there's roadblocks for getting things done in any city, including Buffalo. What I don't want is for us to just say, like, hey, because in the past this was something that prevented us to do it, that's the way it's got to be going forward, you know? So yeah, I want us to both steal a lot of great ideas, you know, come up with some of our own too that are unique to Buffalo, and also learn some of the game plans that have worked in other places for how to get to those future states.
You had mentioned, Peter, people living in downtown is obviously very important. Rocco, previously we had discussed potential new funding for condo development. Can you talk a little bit about that and if it's really a potential reality?
It certainly is a reality, and other parts of the state are using it, and we haven't done anything with it in Buffalo. And it's a program in which the state will give you $150,000 in subsidy for a condo or a...
For a developer?
For the purchaser.
For the purchaser.
Yes.
Okay.
So if it's a $400,000 purchase price, you get it for $250,000.
Hmm.
And the program is good for co-ops, because when you're talking about doing historic buildings and using tax credits, it has to be a co-op instead of a condominium. And I know that's not familiar with people in Buffalo, but in New York City, there's very few condos, and most of the reconstruction is done with the co-ops.
Now, will this be able to give the developers more power to build out these condominium units? Or, like, because, I mean, we've always talked about the prices. It's so expensive to build anything right now, to develop anything.
Well, your price can be higher because you're getting a subsidy. Mm-hmm. But it's just something that's not been used. I went to a charrette with the UB Architectural School, and all the students there had their charrette, and not one of them mentioned home ownership.
Mm-hmm.
They all mentioned apartments. And I think that's a mindset in Buffalo
that's
that
right.
We don't think about putting home ownership downtown.
Yeah, which is crazy because if you think about it, I mean, a lot of these people are they're older, their kids have graduated, they're gone, they're out of the nest, and they're selling their house wherever they're selling, and they're thinking about a condo. But the condominiums, they're just not around. They're almost impossible to find.
Right, but how about this idea? Let's say you take the Statler. You take one floor in the Statler, and you put the best, the absolute best charter Montessori school in there, and the best daycare center in there. And then you build all three-bedroom co-ops so that you get families in there. And those families then automatically belong to that school that's in that building. And any excess capacity, other people downtown are able to go to that school. Schools are the number one reason people with families don't live in the city.
That's right.
If you go to any real estate listing, you will see, oh, it's in the Windermere School District. It's in this school district. It's in that. People don't want to live in the city because of the schools. If we put something downtown that attracts people, you will get families and people buying downtown. But we have to take that first step, giving them a reason to come downtown.
Can we talk a little bit about red tape in Buffalo? I know we've been seeing this for a long time. And the other day when we were discussing the potential of Electric Avenue Bar and Restaurant reopening, you had talked about some issues with permits and licensing. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. The Mohawk is ready to open and they're waiting for their liquor license. They get a notice from the IRS or the SLA that there's what they call a 500-foot rule, that you can't have another liquor license within 500 feet of where you're proposing. And if you do, you have to go to a hearing and it holds up your liquor license. Now we're trying to do the opposite downtown. We're trying to put as many and as close together restaurants and bars so that you can create synergy. And so the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. One says you can't do it. The other says we want it. And we need to get people together and on the same page. And I mean, that's great for a neighborhood. And that rule is probably
like Allentown
or right. Elmwood Avenue, where there's residential area.
Mm-hmm.
But on a strictly commercial streets in a downtown area, you certainly don't need additional red tape discouraging people from opening up businesses.
Peter, are you aware of issues like this, or these are things that are all coming to your attention? Because I'd imagine you've got a lot on your plate right now.
Yeah, I'm just getting my feet wet in terms of like all the different things that we want to be addressing here. But I think one thing in the vein that Rock is talking about here is when you think about some of those most vibrant downtowns that you were kind of pointing to as potential examples there, one of the things that's really common about them, and you look at the statistics, is the density of activity. And this is part of, I think, what Rock is getting at here, is that whether those be restaurants, nightlife, retail, other service businesses, if you were to just count up the number of those in downtown, it's that the number is not all that bad, but the issue is that they're not always clustered together geographically. So like there isn't always the sense of density and activity that you want to have, right? So when we're thinking about what we're prioritizing for downtown, where are those spots that already have some density that we can build on, you know, and radiate out from that, right? And so like when Rocco was talking about like, hey, you've got two venues next door to each other, that can be a really powerful thing when you start seeing the clusters of those together. It's like, I'm going to go to that part of town because I know that I can meet one friend here and I'm going to move next door for a little bit afterwards. And if it's for retail and lunch and stuff like that, similarly, it's like, we want to be in a spot where people say like, I'm going to meet you downtown for dinner or for lunch and stuff because you know that you're going to do a couple things when you get down there. But if things are too geographically spread out and you don't feel the density of it, you might not think that way about this as being the right fit for what you want to do.
Peter, when you were dealing with all of these startup ventures and bringing these young startups to Buffalo, do you kind of look at how can we do something similar with just businesses in Buffalo? Because a lot of times what we see is just the same people doing the same things, not to say that they're not doing great things, but how do we get more people from outside of Buffalo interested in doing all the things that you're talking about right now? Like, I mean, like how do we get on their radar?
Yeah, so this might be the way I'm currently thinking about downtown is and is kind of three layers of experience. So the base layer of it is, if you go down there with no event happening, do you find things for you that appeal to you that want to bring you down there? The same thing we're talking about, restaurants, shops, service businesses on the average day. Second layer of it is, what are the reoccurring, consistent events that are happening on a weekly or monthly basis that you come back over and over again? You know, so some of the stuff that Rocco's starting to touch on here about some of the program that he's got for the Electric District and some of the stuff that we're also doing in other parts of downtown really kind of, I think, plays well to that of saying, like, I know that I can go to a concert in, across from Tapo for a rock show on a Friday or a jazz show on Sunday, or that it can come to Thursday in Maine, you know, on Thursdays through the summertime over at Fountain Plaza. When you've got these type of consistent, repeated things that people can come back to over and over again, now you start having patterns of behavior in enduring relationships. And I think that is part of, I think, how you start creating a sense of momentum to a place and how it becomes that more, much more attractive for the more permanent things that base layer underneath it to come into. And then I think you also pick your moments for the third layer up top for big things that introduce people to the district in the first place. But it's really critical that layers one and two are there, because you don't want these to be one-off interactions with folks that are fleeting. You want these to be things that are enduring, where now they come back over and over again. That's where I think you get the real magic of this. So when you're talking about whether you're enticing people that are already within this region to do things, or you're attracting people from elsewhere to do it, I think if people don't perceive the type of momentum that they need to have there and have conditions that are exciting for it, that's a more challenging sell for that.
West Coast Perspective, really quickly, had mentioned that he would like to ask a question, and his question is, are there really 20,000 fewer workers in downtown Buffalo? Are we still at a stage where we're desperately trying to get people back to work, or are these losses that we've suffered?
I just left my office, and which is on the 8th floor, it overlooks the Adams ramp. Out of 8 floors, there are only cars on 3 floors. So nobody's working from downtown today because they have off on Monday. Mm-hmm. And it's like that every Friday. I think it's getting better. M&T Bank is now wants their employees back 4 days a week. It's not where it was, that's for sure. But it's getting better. And you can know just by talking to people at BCAR, the Buffalo Civic Auto Ramps, mm-hmm. they're gradually seeing the number of cars increase downtown.
Yeah. I mean, it's worth noting that today is a Friday. As we're recording, this is a Friday before Memorial Day weekend. And so yes. I think there's a lot of people there. They're making an extra long weekend. But I would say also, you know, this week, you know, we had a couple real beautiful days over the last week, you know, and I was walking through downtown and at lunchtime, and there was a lot of energy and a lot of people on foot. You know, it's, you know, kind of start of spring, first warm days, people want to be out and go into it. And I was getting a little taste of the type of energy that we want to have. But I think, you know, I'm very much encouraged by the decision that M&T went with to have 4 days in the office, because that is a really big impact on downtown to have another day of a really large employer having presence there. I think the other things that, you know, I'm encouraged by is some of the new things and new organizations that are choosing to be downtown. So the Golisano Institute coming into the former Buffalo News building, I think is great on a few levels. Like, one, you're in a very important part of downtown in terms of having the hockey arena there, Harbor Center, Canal Side, Seneca One. And you had a building that was vacant for some time for the Buffalo News building that's now going to come back to life. And when you get a peek of the work they're doing in there, it's going to be a really vibrant, cool place. But also the students and faculty they're having in there are really business-minded and forward-thinking, thinking about how this is the next wave of contributors to our work community here downtown. You also have, you know, Ingram Micro that, you know, just moved downtown from their staff from being out in the suburbs. And I think that's great. Now, that I think what's, you know, what my team is really recognized, we have to do the best job that we can to make sure that these folks that come downtown feel as connected as possible to the things that they have, you know, because, you know, got a few blocks distance from, you know, the new headquarters from Ingram Micro, for example, to Main Street. And you've got the Main Place Mall building that kind of blocks it off. So we're going to be meeting with them, you know, in a few weeks in person for us to go out there and create the welcome wagon for how do we make sure that we create as many pathways literally for them to get there to downtown for restaurants and stuff and they want to stick around a little bit afterwards. So we recognize we got to make sure that we're doing as much as we can to extend ourselves in that way. But those are signs that are kind of points to the good when we're thinking about, you know, how do we get more people down there. And I think an important part in this too is that, you know, my mindset and team's mindset is there's, if you're working downtown, you have to be down there, right? If your employer requires it. We want to make sure that we're not, that that's not what we're striving for, is that cases where people just have to be there. How do we ensure that we know what would make them want to be there, right? And not just during their work hours, but in the hours afterwards and on the weekends, right? So a lot of what, you know, I'm working with my team on and I'm having coffees and lunches across the district is to learn about all the different audiences that already come downtown for work or for entertainment, you know, whether it be in the theater district or down at Canal Side or at the arena or the ballpark. What are those audiences that already come down and what are their needs and why did they come down there in the first place? And how do we make sure that we're maximizing what we already have there and making sure we're telling that story really well for what we have? But also for their needs, what gaps are that currently exist there, you know, and how can we fill those gaps either through the work that Buffalo Place does or that our partners do, you know, and to ensure that we're solving those needs for them for things they actually care about. I don't want us to rely just on the goodwill and civic mindset of our community. I want to say, what's critical for your business? What do you need for your family? What do you need for your social needs? What do you need for your professional networking? And how can we solve for those things with the assets we have downtown and the program we have downtown and the things we can add in both those categories? And how can we tell that story effectively enough so that you know about it and want to show up for it?
I'm going to ask both of you this question. It's a two-parter. Rocco, tell me about perception of safety in downtown Buffalo.
Yeah, there is a real difference between actuality and perception. And unfortunately, the perception is that it's unsafe, and it's not really unsafe. It's just that you see people there panhandling. You see homeless people on the street, and it scares some people.
And some of those people actually are selling drugs. And the reason I know that is because I've been solicited. So, I mean, I'm not saying, so that exists too. So there is a bit of perception, a lot of perception, but there is also, it's based on some reality.
Yeah, and one of my thoughts is that, you know, Buffalo Place has rangers.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see those rangers become peace officers. So they have some authority to arrest and give tickets to people. And I walk around with a uniform on. Right now, peace officers don't really have a uniform on. We need a presence of police, because you're not going to have our actual police force because they're too busy. But if we have the rangers dressed like policemen and make them peace officers, I think it'll make a big difference downtown, because people will start listening to them when they direct them to do something. If you look like a ranger, nobody's going to listen to you because you look like the guy right next door, next to me.
Mm-hmm.
You need somebody who's got an authority.
Yeah. Peter?
I think, you know, if you think about a hierarchy of needs, at the very base of it is, do you feel safe in whatever environment you're in? If someone doesn't perceive that they're safe, doesn't matter how cool the events and programming are and stuff like that, they are meaningfully going to be impacted whether or not they're going to come up and show up for that thing if they don't perceive that they're safe. And I think Rocco has a good point. Like, if you look at the statistics on downtown relative to other places that you could visit, it's a much safer place than people sometimes perceive it to be. But the key to all this is, how do people perceive it to be? And for us to be hitting this on two fronts. One, to do everything we can to ensure that it actually is safe. And then also, that's, I think it's working with our partners across the community. That's the police department, the NFTA. We have a monthly meeting of all the security leads for all the companies downtown. And, you know, we work very close with them. And then also our rangers, you know, and I think that is something that the Ranger program has been around for a very long time. It's had different iterations over the course of it. And I think we do have an important role to play in terms of helping people feel safe there. And for me, I'm in the stage right now of learning all the aspects we do and how we best support that. And, you know, but I also want to make sure that, like, our existing team as we go forward has all the support that they need, has all the training that they need to go through it. And for us to have a lot of clarity for, like, you know, depending on the situation, what resource is the right one to support and how we make sure that we make communication across the district really clear about that. So, yeah, this is of greatest importance to me. You know, it's like we got to make sure that people feel safe and secure in that district, because that is one of the components that's table stakes to be able to unlock the true exciting big things we're driving toward.
You know, and I think that's why cluster development is so important, mm-hmm. because you get a lot of people in a small space and people feel safer.
That's right.
When there's more of them.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's perception. And the perception is it's safer when there's a lot of people together.
Rocco, I just want to backtrack for 1 second back to that Statler idea of the charter school and the daycare. It's a fantastic idea. How do we make it happen? I love throwing an idea against a wall, but like what are the steps to make that happen?
Well, here's what we need. You know, we have planners. We have a planner at BCAR. We have a planner at Buffalo Place. We have a planner at the city of Buffalo. We have a planner at Erie County. We need to have all our planners in one spot, even if they're paid for by different people. And they need to work on serious problems that we have. And there's no building that's in the city of Buffalo that there's not money available right this minute to redo them. It's just you have to know where the money is. And we don't have any overall direction on how to do this. And if we had people that became experts in getting money from the state, from the federal government, we can redo downtown. But we need to have some experts. We need a think tank in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a think tank. A place where people can really look at problems and come up with solutions.
Which, Peter, I mean, that's the world you're coming from.
Yeah, I think a few things. Like, one, I'm just getting introduced to something called Queen City Hub Revisited, which is a plan that initially was an award-winning plan that came out in the early 2000s for downtown development and now is being updated with some grant dollars. And I think that's one of the ways that we can start, you know, bring to the table all that some of the same players you're talking about, Rocco. But I think some of your point is to make sure that when we make plans, that we have enough, you know, detail and conviction on the follow through on them afterwards. And I like the idea of thinking about, like, how do we give people the shortest path to, you know, all the incentives and ways to take on challenging projects on the way as we get to it. I think also when you're talking about coming from the world of startups for the last dozen years, there's a few things that I think affects my worldview and that hopefully in a positive way will impact the work that I get to do in this role is that one, you know, yeah, by nature, folks that are doing successful tech startups see opportunities where other people don't, you know, and exploit those for large gains, you know. And I think, you know, that's one part of it. Second is a perspective and perception of risk. And I think if we're, you know, talking Buffalo history here for a second, I think in the roots of this community, as you go back to its earliest days, we were a city that grew exponentially because people were willing to take bets and take risk on behalf of the community. I think as a community, when we got to the second half of the 20th century, you saw, you know, folks, you know, lose some of the big industry and stuff like that and go away. I think we had a moment in time back then where we had a decision to make of, are we going to take a lot of new bets and replenish, you know, the opportunities as community, or are we going to entrench and hold on to what we have? I think, unfortunately, we chose choice two in a lot of cases, and it became this very protectionist, you know, careful, ultra-conservative view on stuff and saying, we got to hold on to what we got, you know? And so by the time that I started getting involved in startups back at the start of 2014, we as a community were like way behind peer series. We only had $6 million of venture capital invested. And there was this mindset that like this, we're going to stick with traditional things that are safe and stuff like that. And we're not going to take these chances. Now, when you've seen this, the amount of investment in startups and the culture change in this, and you've seen hundreds of millions of dollars invested in community and thousands of jobs that are created for it, you see the impact of when people are willing to take risk, do it over an extended period of time. You can't just take, you know, like one chance and try something out, and then when it doesn't work out, that you say, well, I'll throw up my hands, I'm just going to go back to things before. You have to have this weird combination of acting with urgency with a long view on it for, you know, a greater outcome that's exponentially better, not just a single step better. But I think a lot of ways that goes against a lot of people's human nature. You know, I mean, it's like, it's really difficult for us sometimes to see outside our immediate challenges in our lives, you know, in terms of our family needs, our personal needs, our individual career needs. And to recognize that we have to take some chances and act with urgency for a future state that may or may not come exactly the way we want it to be. That's the mindset of startups, though. And I think that's part of, you know, hopefully what I can bring to this role is both that willingness, that the ability to maybe see some opportunities with some fresh eyes, but also to have, you know, strategy, but willing to take some calculated risks amongst it to in the name of trying to get to something that's exponentially better.
Look what happened in Detroit. The risk that they took in Detroit. The difference between Detroit and Buffalo, they're willing to take risks. They have corporate headquarters. They had a ton of private money. Some of the original projects that were done with all private money because banks looked the other way. We don't have those abilities here in Buffalo. Buffalo is a very conservative town, as Peter said. And, you know, the banks...
Or at least here, historically has been. I think you're seeing some shift to that perspective, which I think is very healthy, but it's taken
a long time.
Yeah.
Maybe too long. We need to move quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And we also need to look, when we're talking about downtown, when you do something, what area is it going to make the most impact on? And how is it going to affect the rest of the neighborhood? Is it going to be a leader in that neighborhood to affect other businesses and other buildings that could be redone? We can't just spend money willy-nilly. We have to look at a picture. And, you know, I'm looking at trying to convince people right now that there's a block on Ellicott Street. The whole block is empty. It's owned by Douglas Jamal. It used to be the old Icon. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
My thought is to develop that whole block with tax credits and some government money. You put BCAR in there. You put Buffalo Place in there. You put the Convention Bureau in there. And you put UB School of Architecture and Planning, some of their people in there. And one building is a daycare center. And the daycare center is actually helps you in retention. You have a lot of small, not so small, but young companies downtown, like Odoo. They have 400 employees. They're all, most of them are under 40 years old. They all have a lot of kids. What would be the best thing to retain those employees, but having low-cost daycare downtown? And they'll come downtown then, and they'll be happy to work at Odoo. But we need to look at all these things, and we need collaboration. I talked to the people from the UB School of Architecture. They thought it was a great idea that everybody goes into one building and that we can collaborate and work together on doing things. You also save expenses. You need one receptionist. You need one accountant. You need one of everything.
It's a great idea. We're a border city. How do we engage Canadians again?
It's easy. And you know, we won't do it. I went to the Visitors and Convention Bureau, had a whole plan for them. We need downtown to accept Canadian dollars at par. And you know, you look at the hotels downtown, they're 60% full. So that means 40% of the rooms are empty. So why not rent those 40% to people at par? It's better than keeping them empty.
It's also sending a message that, hey, you know, we're welcoming you. I just wrote something recently on Buffalo Rising about how we really do have the ability to embrace Canadians because we are the city of good neighbors, and we look at them like, you know, we're hoping that they look at us like we look at them, and we're like, okay, you know, I know that it's easier said than done. But I think that if you actually approach Canadians in these types of
you need a plan. And yep. I wanted all the restaurants downtown to accept Canadian money at par. We wanted to make Hamilton a sister city of Buffalo. Again, doing collaboration with Canadians.
I love that idea. That's great.
A thought was, and this is a far reach, but all of the first floor commercial buildings on Main Street, you would condo those buildings out from the rest of the building, turn them over to the state. We would use state money to redo all of those storefronts. And then we would rent them to retail establishments, national, where we would charge, because there's no rent, because the state owns it, there would be no rent. They would charge they would accept Canadian money at par, and it would become a sales tax free zone. So Canadians could come here and get almost 40% off of what they purchase. And there's 5 million people within an hour and a half of Buffalo, and we don't address them.
Mm-hmm.
We ignore them. And it's too hard. It's not too hard. People will travel 20 miles to save 10 cents on a gallon of gasoline.
My dad.
And he'll spend 15 cents to get it.
Right, yeah.
And it's the same thing with retail. If you put discount stores up and down Ralph Lauren, you'll get Canadians coming here, and
Buffalonians coming here too.
Yeah, but they wouldn't be able to get the...
But they'd still be pretty excited, I bet.
And doing the shopping downtown, people would come here then for the day.
Yeah.
And the other thing we don't do, we don't offer anything that makes people, if they come here for a day for a business, you want to stay another day. When we do the Christmas market downtown, we're going to have a hay wagon, a red hay wagon with a tractor pulling it all over downtown, picking up people from hotels, from other restaurants, bars, and bringing them to the market. We're doing stuff to make people want to stay in Buffalo when they come here for a short visit.
Peter, anything you want to touch on on that topic?
Yeah, I mean, so as I mentioned earlier in the conversation, I was at Visit Buffalo Niagara for a stretch of my career for a few years, and I was doing communications for them, and I would go up to Canada pretty frequently to meet with the Toronto media for the Toronto Star and talk with, you know, folks on the tourism side of it. And Canadians for decades have been one of the most important, you know, audiences for tourism here for Western New York. And it's, you know, a challenging time, you know, for any communities in the U.S. in terms of just like an extra strain that's on the relationship right now. But Buffalonians, you know, with the proximity and the familiarity, I think have a special opportunity to mend some of those bridges. And, you know, even just the coverage that came from folks singing the Canadian national anthem at the hockey game is like a symbol of like how interwoven our lives are with Canadians, you know. And, you know, we've spent our, folks that grown up here have spent their life going back and forth across the border. We don't think twice about it, right? And, you know, it's always interesting when I used to do that job, and that was, you know, a little bit more than a dozen years ago. You know, I'd ask Canadians at that time, you know, like, what do you do when you come to Buffalo? And their associations were with, you know, coming for sporting events and for going to large shopping environments. You know, in many cases, they didn't really realize all the stuff that was available in downtown Buffalo or in some neighborhoods like the Elmwood Village and stuff like that. And when I would introduce that to them, you're like, holy cow, that's really cool. It's got a lot of character and stuff. We might consider that. So I think a lot of what I think about, whether it's Canadians or folks from our community or places from other communities, is really being as thorough as we can of understanding audiences based upon what behaviors they've exhibited in the past, and having some hierarchy to, like, who are we going to stress most in terms of who we're trying to serve, and to be real about what their needs are, you know, whether it be on the shopping side of it or what kind of attractions they're looking for, whether they're a cultural traveler coming from, you know, Kansas City, or they're someone coming down from Bills game from Toronto or whatever it be. What are their needs? Similarly, for people within our community, what are their needs? I think that's a lot of what drives my thinking for programming and the day-to-day experience of shops and restaurants when you come down there. If we're solving for those things, you know, then you have something really powerful, you know, and you're not just kind of taking shots in the dark. You've got strategy behind it. And if you act with urgency of that, I think you could do something really special.
Rocco, West Coast Perspective, who has been a valiant writer for Buffalo Rising for a long time, has asked if you would wrestle developer Paul Simonelli in Niagara Square for charity.
Absolutely. Poor Paul, he would be beaten to a pulp.
Well, I'll see if I can put this together for you and Paul.
Jeez Louise.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
You are.
Thanks, Bill.